Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Are we ready to start?
We are.
Good.
Can I say something? Have I become a ripperologist?
Uh-oh.
I have. I'm starting to use the initials JTR to refer to Jack the Ripper more often than ever I've ever thought I would.
That's the start down the slippery slope, my friend.
You have read up to four books about Jack the Ripper, am I now with them?
Well, there's no accreditation for a Jack the Ripperologist.
There's no accreditation for anything.
Well,
for
you
any
also,
of these people.
You have to smell like old blood. Do you smell like old blood?
I don't know. I mean, let me check my pants.
All right. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben Kissel. I'm staring at Marcus Parks, and he's in studio with us today.
The only smell I'm getting is dick.
All right. Well, then you're not yet a Ripperologist.
All right, good. I'm relieved.
But by the end of this episode, all of us will be, including the listeners. We're on to Jack the Ripper Part 5, Suspects Part 2.
Technically Jack the Ripper Part 4, The Suspects Part 2.
Oh, yes. What? No, that's...
Yes.
Really?
It's like I said before, it's like Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. It was two movies, Part 1 and Part 2.
No, Okay.
Yeah.
So, Part 4, Suspects Part 2.
Yep. Okay. Now you're getting it.
Whatever.
This is the fifth hour of Jack the Ripper content exclusively for you. Now, I want you to know, for a fact, we are literally just scratching the surface.
Yep.
Today, we're going to talk about what we believe are the most reasonable suspects. There are many more.
Mm.
Just go to casebook.com. I believe the name of it, I believe it's casebookjacktheripper.com. Let me see the actual one. www.casebook.org.
Yeah.
If you just want to go through.
Huh?
Oh, and that makes it official.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
That makes it very, very special. But there are many, many. There's a suspects page that has 3, 6, 9, 12, 15, 18, 21, 24, 27, 30, 33, 34 different suspects that they each have a book written about them.
Well, now that we got Jeff Sessions in there under Donald Trump, it'll be a .gov pretty soon.
I'm sure
Trump is going to solve it.
But there are certain ones, so we're going to go through two specifically today, but there are three more that you can always look up that we're not going to cover today. There's out there, it's like, you could read about the concept of the Diary of Jack the Ripper, which
mm-hmm.
puts James Maybrick as possibly Jack the Ripper.
Fake.
It's complete horseshit.
That's fake news?
There's complete fake
Whoa.
News. But there are people that believe it's entirely real because they are broken. There's W.H. Berry, who's another very big possible Jack the Ripper suspect. Also, probably not. I am at this point wondering if there even were Jack the Ripper murders, but we'll get that at the end of the episode.
Well, he sounds like a rock and roll pianist. I like that guy.
Who?
Berry.
Burry. It's Burry.
Is it Burry?
No, Berry just, like, to me, that's but the problem is that ever since the restaurant scandal, Chuck Berry just reminds me of watching women pee.
Oh, that's right. He set up a camera there, little director.
Yeah. Same thing with our president.
Oh, yeah.
Carl Feigenbaum is the other one that was another big suspect
mm-hmm.
that was. But these two today are vaguely reasonable.
Okay.
I would say very reasonable. These are our two pet suspects that we really like. The first that we'll cover today is Fred Deeming. Now, much of this information comes from a BBC documentary called Jack the Ripper, Prime Suspect, available on Netflix, and highly recommended. It is super fun.
It's awesome. Better than the other two Jack the Ripper documentaries that are on Netflix, because the other two just are the part of the Royal Conspiracy ones, which are admittedly the more fun theories, but
right.
they're completely false. It is not real.
I've been watching nothing but documentaries on prison reform.
I watched a documentary on puppies the other day. It was
That's
fantastic.
Fun.
Have you watched that one?
Well, my Twitter feed is all puppies right now.
I've seen that.
Yes.
It looks like you've gone mad.
Yeah, yeah. I got sad and I said, send me your puppies. Send me puppies.
Watch the puppy documentary. There's a whole section on puppy parades. You'll love it.
I watched the Alex Jones Joe Rogan interview and I got to say, I'm going to be Alex Jones.
Well, we're going to stop. We're going to try to prevent that.
Back to Fred Deeming. Frederick Bailey Deeming was a con man and convicted murderer whose death mask was often pointed to in Scotland Yard's Black Museum as the face of Jack the Ripper when visitors would come through.
There he is, right. Hey, you want to pick his nose? Hey, we have to do fun thing. We all lay our dick over and it's over his top lip like it's a funny little mustache.
Still a little rude, though, to do to a corpse.
We don't even know if it's Jack the Ripper. We're just saying it.
Deeming, as far as his upbringing goes, he was said to have had an unnaturally strong relationship with his mother, who was said to have also been extremely domineering. His father was often absent, having spent quite a bit of time in a mental institution for unknown problems.
I mean, maybe he was just too happy to be British. They're like, you know, we live in squalor and we're surrounded by human dookie, right?
Or maybe the gnomes were actually coming to the house at night and fixing the shoes.
Hey, how else do you get the doorknobs to work?
Truth is stranger than fiction.
Think about that.
Deeming left home at 16 for a life at sea and quickly developed a reputation as a con artist, often posing as a member of the upper class in his schemes. He would lead a life of crime and would be arrested multiple times for fraud in England, Australia, and even as far away as South Africa.
Do it in the accent.
South Africa.
Isn't that the South
Africa?
South Africa.
You just sound like an annoying elderly woman going up the stairs slow.
You have me pity, lad. Oh, they done. You done. There is happening. South Africa. Well,
we can only be grateful that not a lot of films take place in South Africa.
Blood Diamond.
District 9.
Deeming eventually went down for both the murder of his second wife in Australia and the murder of his first wife and four children in England. He cut the throats of his first wife and three of his children before strangling and cutting the throat of the fourth before burying them under the kitchen floor. He also cut the throat of his second wife before bashing her head in with an axe.
Yeah! Wow.
Baby,
do you think sometimes when you're making a sandwich in a kitchen and you know your whole family is underneath the floorboards, do you laugh? You're just like, that's kind of strange.
I just eliminated my own role as father. And also,
weird.
In Australia, to do axe murderers, you actually kill them with a handle upside down there.
Oh, interesting.
It's funny and cute.
Yep. Fun.
But I'm going to say, I'm going to point this towards, there's going to be problems with the Fred Deeming theory, but that's, of course, because I'm the grand debunker. Here. We'll talk about this.
Yeah, we'll
Did
talk.
Do you want to label yourself the
yes,
grand
I want
debunker?
I want a sash. I want a sash, and I want little shoes, yes. And I want a big floppy hat like a chef's hat that says debunk A on it.
This is your Costanza T-bone moment. You're like, yeah. I have T-bone for every dinner. Call me T-bone.
After he killed that second wife, he buried her under the fireplace in their home. He had bought the supplies for said burial days before the murder, proving premeditation. It was not a crime of passion. And when he was arrested for that murder in Australia,
I mean, he obviously was feeling some passion.
He was
excited to kill his family.
It wasn't a spur of the moment.
Does he not go outside? Why is he burying all these people in the home?
Look at John Wayne Gacy. You do what's easy.
I guess so.
You just do what you got. You got space in there. You're in Australia. You have to put everything on fucking tent poles to hide from the various dangerous animals that are just roving the ground. Everything can kill you.
It would be a great HGTV show, Home Renovations for the Serial Killer Inside of You.
Now, when he was arrested for the murder of his wife in Australia, he was in the possession of a case containing 20 knives, including a dagger that could reasonably said to have been used in the Ripper murders. At the time of his capture, Deeming was posing as an aristocrat named Baron Swanson.
Oh.
You can just see the mustache falling off his face as he speaks.
It's oh, Baron Swanson. Yeah, you bet you're right. Right there, mate. Yeah. Always been a baron, always will. Yeah. Fetch me boomerang and stuck aside this asshole of this old fat woman I met.
The mustache.
I'm a baron. I'm an aristocrat.
Your mustache is falling right.
I'm from South Africa.
Tellingly, the British press treated this whole Baron Swanson ruse with almost more contempt than they did concerning the six murders he was accused of.
They hate fake dukes in England. It's kind of like, and they get so mad because, like, fake dukes, it's got like when you go to the toilet to sit down instead of shit and you fart, they hate that too.
All sound, no fury.
Exactly. Fury is what I like to call the lumps.
I think. Let's move on.
And speaking of aristocrats, who, if you'll remember from the second episode, they desperately wanted the Ripper to be one of their own, so too did the Australians want the Ripper to have at least murdered someone in their country, giving them a top shelf criminal in the history books.
Well, now we're back to Dookie with the top shelf.
And then it's like, it comes out, I mean, like, you wanted a serial killer in the royalty system or as a part of the royal family. It's like, you probably already got five.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just fucking lean on those guys.
Yeah, and
half of you are lizards. Yeah. You're literally doing weird ancient, like, symbolic rituals every other day in order to call upon dark lords that are giving you secret knowledge. Be like, focus on that. Oh, that's plenty dark.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But the Australians really wanted Jack the Ripper to be an Australian.
You know, there wasn't a lot going on for these people.
They just wanted something else. They had big spiders and sticks that'd come back.
Yeah, which is so strange. They always try to throw them away.
And every burger shop, you know for a fact, is run by a sex criminal. Because it's Australia, and that's where all the sex criminals went.
Yeah, kangaroos are cute, though.
But despite the insistence of the Australians, Deeming was ruled out years ago as a suspect, as he was supposedly in prison at the time of the murders. However... recent discoveries suggest otherwise. Deeming was supposed to have been doing time in Hull prison for fraud during the Ripper cases, but although Deeming was known to use up to 20 aliases, none of those aliases are present in the English prison system in the autumn of 1888. Deeming was in Hull prison at one point, which is where all this confusion came from, but that wasn't until 1890, 2 years after the Ripper murders. But strangely enough, that prison stint actually gives us a link to those same murders.
So, but he was in prison for fraud, not for the multiple murders.
I mean, the multiple murders came later.
Yeah, he killed his family, but we'll get into that because killing your family is different than killing prostitutes.
Well,
because you know your family, you know why they're bad.
What I'm about to say right here, this disproves that. Soon after Deeming was released, the body of a young girl was found not an hour's walk from the prison, dead from injuries similar to that of the victims of Fred Deeming and Jack the Ripper. This suggests that while Deeming was only proved to have killed family members, it is very probable that he committed at least one stranger murder as well, suggesting that he was very well capable of killing prostitutes.
You know what, Marcus? I'm going to make you the grand debunker.
No!
No, I'm a bunker.
Debunked Henry.
No, that's right. I did debunk
you. You debunked the debunker. You're the grand debunker.
Oh, wait a second, though. Let me adjust my debunker cap. Let me tighten my debunker sash.
You are expanded.
Now, concerning the murders themselves, Deeming's motive was the same as oh so many other suspects, syphilis.
Ooh.
Early in 1888, Deeming had contracted syphilis from a prostitute. Years later, Deeming would tell his lawyer during the murder trial for his wife and family that the syphilis rendered him, quote-unquote,
useless for 2 years, I was.
And also, and then he went on record saying that if he could have killed the prostitute who gave him the disease, he would have, and she would have fucking deserved it.
Huh?
It's true.
Motivation.
That is
extreme motivation.
But at the same time, I feel like if you toss an umbrella in Europe, you're going to hit most people with syphilis.
That's a very good point. And he just wanted to kill the one that gave him syphilis.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. When the body of Catherine Eddowes was found, her nose had been cut off, mimicking what happens to victims of syphilis in the later stages of the disease. This could have been symbolic for Deeming, whose established hatred of prostitutes due to the disease could have driven him to kill. Yeah, see, he couldn't find the prostitute that gave him syphilis. That was just long ago and far away.
Obviously, he could have fucked a juicy old rotting melon that had syphilis in it and could have gotten it from that. Because I feel like Fred Deeming possibly would have done something like that.
Yeah, that's okay. So it's like when you can't find a good pizza place, so you go to Cece's.
Yeah.
But you want pizza because you want pizza.
You want pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, syphilis, as we know, can also cause psychosis, and Deeming was said to have had hallucinations featuring his mother.
Interesting.
That's
and
the
also,
worst.
That's a tied to normal serial killer like motivation, and also it made you impotent. So that's the other big thing, too, is that your penis doesn't work anymore, and you're really upset about it.
Very upset. That's what he meant by saying that he was rendered useless for 2 years.
Right.
He got it back, but for 2 years... totally useless.
Like Stella.
He got his groove back.
Yeah.
Now, concerning that syphilis psychosis, Deeming actually used that as an excuse as to why he murdered his whole family. He blamed this and the press for his conviction, saying he had been tried and convicted in the papers. He called the press, quote, the ugliest race of people I've ever seen.
Absolutely disgusting. It's sad. I can't believe how disgusting the race of press is. It's disgusting.
He called the press is a race now?
Yeah, the press is a whole race of people.
He called it a race of people.
Isn't that a strange way?
Dishonest. Very dishonest.
Dishonest. Huh. Disgusting. Absolutely. It's tremendous the amount of disrespect they're showing.
Isn't that rude?
But it's kind of interesting is that he, calling them a race, it's just he just thinks every job is a different species of human.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, he's a sailor human. They are press people.
Interesting.
Now, murder-wise, both the Ripper and Deeming killed their victims quickly, and both Deeming and the Ripper strangled some of their victims before slitting their throats, and in some cases, the organs were arranged following the Ripper murders with the body parts being placed at the sides and at the feet. And when Deeming's family was found, the two children were placed on either side of Deeming's wife, with the youngest placed at the wife's feet. By the way, the Ripper murders came before the family murders.
This is the guy. We got the guy.
I don't think we do.
As far as Mary Kelly goes, I've discovered since our third episode that many forensic scientists believe an axe was used to split her thigh bone in addition to the knife that was used to slit her throat and mutilate her. And when Deeming killed his wife years later, he killed her both with a knife and with an axe.
Yeah, you got to just...
You can't stop me from shuffling.
Well, and also they found on Mary Kelly's body a fake mustache. So think about that.
Baron Macedonia, artist from South Africa.
Now, concerning Deeming's knowledge of the streets of Whitechapel, remember that he was a sailor, and Whitechapel is near a port.
England's an island.
As we said, you know, Whitechapel is a very confusing place to get around. It's like a maze. But it is highly likely that while he wouldn't have had the knowledge that a Whitechapel resident would have, he was no doubt familiar with the area due to it being a place where prostitutes tend to be found very easily. He was in and out of London a lot. He admitted during his murder trial that he made regular trips to London, and this coincided with a new rail link that made travel from Liverpool, where Deeming lived in 1888, to London quick and easy.
Sounds like a lot of jumps in logic, but you know,
I don't think it's jumps in logic at all.
I'm just sitting here tight in my little debunker shoes.
Oh, I know.
Waiting for my chance to speak.
Well, I can't wait to hear your debunking, because at this point, he's guilty. We got to get this guy to the town square. We got to corner him. He is way guilty. I've never seen such guilt on somebody.
So, while this doesn't place him specifically in Whitechapel, eyewitness accounts do. See, unlike any other suspect, we have both the death mask of Fred Deeming as well as his actual skull. We know that Deeming had a very distinctive face with very unusual features. His brow protruded from his skull, giving him deep-set eyes. He also had a square jaw, which is usually accompanied by a solid build.
That's like Kissel.
That's not like me, you Neanderthal.
Yeah, you look just like that.
No, deep-set eyes
you
are like...
deep-set eyes.
No, I don't have deep-set eyes. Deep-set eyes are like people who don't have to buy hats because they have God-given cranial sun protection.
I have very deep-set eyes. I feel like we look very similar.
No, true deep-set eyes. You know what I'm talking about. They always look... They're always dark around there because the sun's not getting in. I mean...
Raccoon
you save a lot of money.
Eyes?
Similar.
Like a Misha Barton.
Yes.
Does she have deep-set eyes?
No.
Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's like...
Usually these people aren't movie stars.
Johnny Depp?
No. They're one of the most handsome men in the world.
Oprah Winfrey.
Maybe. I don't think so. No,
but I'm saying
Jaws.
You have a square jaw. You have a big head and a square jaw, and you got a solid, you have a big, wide body.
Is this the beginning of Extreme Ben Makeover? No. What are you doing with me?
Do you remember Ugly Duckling, where they used to,
yes, if
they,
the
people
atrocious.
Would win to get surgery, and then they'd still be called ugly because they said that their surgery wasn't good enough?
That was one of the most offensive shows. Extreme Makeover, yeah. Human Edition. It was so bad.
My sister is the best gift giver I've ever met of any person. It's Jackie Zabrowski. She shops all year thinking about her family and friends and puts little things aside for their birthdays and Christmases. I have no idea how she does it. I don't know how she do it. But guess what? She always wins Mother's Day, but not this year. I'm coming back. Ready to win Mother's Day and cement your reputation as the best gift giver in the family? I'm taking the crown. All right, give the moms in your life an Aura digital picture frame preloaded with decades of family photos. I mean this. We have the Aura frame up in my home. We absolutely love it. I can put photos on it very, very easily through the app. It's fun to do. And the memories keep cycling and I get emotional. And we filled it with pictures of Carmi and Wendy. And that is not sad. That is celebratory. So you should try it. It's honestly a really good product. Right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code LEFT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply. This podcast is brought to you by Squarespace. Finding work-life balance can be tough, but Squarespace gives you the tools to reach your goals and have time to celebrate. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With the new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, you can select from curated layout and styling options to create a personalized website optimized for every device. Get your website discovered fast with integrated, optimized SEO tools. Plus, make checkout easy for customers with easy-to-use payment tools. And with Squarespace AI, you can explain what your site is about, choose your tone, enter what you need, and get auto-generated text. And that helps you save time. I know I'm sitting on about 2 literal wheelbarrows filled with horse pics. Now, part of the issue has been is a lot of these pictures are getting stopped at customs because some of them do depict various world leaders in horse-like circumstances that seems to be pinging a lot of these custom agents' accounts. Now, so what I've done to do is like, so while I'm trying to work on hand smuggling these horse pics over various country borders, I then also have time, because Squarespace is doing all the other ad work for me, to go and work on my killdozer at home. So thank you, Squarespace, for allowing me to diversify in the best way possible for this country. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial when you're ready to launch. Go to squarespace.com/left to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It says here I have to talk about something I need to get off my chest, and I guess I can share it here. I eat mayonnaise for fun. It's a hobby of mine, and it's an addiction. And it's a daily weight on my life, how much I need whipped egg whites and oil crammed into my veins as soon as I wake up. And a lot of people carry around a lot of different stressors, big and small. Some people are presidents. Some people are soldiers. Some people have to eat mayonnaise, especially with hard-boiled eggs, which is what I eat for lunch. But I guess I should share that in therapy, because therapy is a safe place to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And what I do is I just add eggs if I have mayonnaise left over. I just continue to add the eggs. But if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. I hope they can help me. My God. I hope they can help me. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/lastpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lastpod.
Now, this distinctive face that Fred Deeming had jogged the memory of a dressmaker when she saw Deeming's photograph in a London newspaper during his murder trial. She said that she was with Deeming in Whitechapel on the night of the double event.
Mm. I found it to be very curious because I was trying to not make eye contact with him, having a bit of a conversation with him, but so deep set his eyes was, it was like his eyes were his goddamn ears, and I was like, this is weird me out, I'm gonna remember you the rest of my life, and God, he doffed my bottom. He doffed my bottom until I couldn't ride a horse to the fucking alcohol starnamo.
He duffed your bottom. Oh. Huh? Duffed it.
Oh.
Huh. Soup bowl for eyes. I love this guy.
Now, furthermore, other eyewitness accounts match Deeming to the Ripper. Witnesses said he was between 5'5 and 5'7. Deeming was 5'6. They also said that the Ripper was of solid build, which Deeming was as well. They went on to say he had strange eyes, a carroty mustache, which Deeming had, a high felt hat, a chain watch, and a long overcoat. This matches up perfectly with actual photos we have of Deeming.
Oh, I thought you were going to say matches up perfectly with every manager at a Chase Bank.
It's true. Like Dick Bunch, we met that guy from Chase Bank. Right.
Was he wearing a top hat?
No.
Well, no, but he was thinking that he should be.
He looked like he was wearing one. But also, it'd be strange if they just, they always keep saying solid build. He's not Alex Mack. He's not going to be a bunch of liquid.
No, I mean, solid build, like, I'm not of solid build. I'm of ropey build.
I'd say you're solid build.
I'm not solid build.
What
I'm
am
very,
I?
Well, by you're the... of, I mean, you're of barrelish build.
Hmm.
Like a barrel.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I think everyone understood what barrelish meant.
Did you mean fat?
No.
Actor fat.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunately, all of this is circumstantial, just like everything with every Ripper suspect is. Forensics-wise, one of the few pieces of evidence that survives to this day is the shawl of Catherine Eddowes, which was found near her body on the night of her murder.
Her shit diaper.
Yeah, that's right. Everything, always remember, listeners at home, everything is covered in human dookie.
Every single part of Whitechapel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this shawl, it is indeed covered with DNA, if you know what I mean.
Very creative.
Now, the samples taken from it, though, have become contaminated in the 130-some-odd years since the murder, and nothing could be matched to Deeming.
Do you think that every guy that got a hold of that shawl, like, just for the, just be like, in memory of Catherine Eddowes.
Oh, I don't.
Just said, came on it just once, like, just that's, like pouring one out.
I guess so. It seems like it would be a lot of work, but.
The other piece of forensics is the letters. DNA left on the stamp of one of the letters does not match Deeming, but, interestingly, the DNA on that stamp isn't male. It actually came from a woman.
It's Splack. Splack the Ripper.
Oh, my God. Everyone died from drowning happy.
Now, it is possible that Deeming forced his wife to write and send the letter for him, as it isn't uncommon for serial killers to get their partners to do the dirty work.
Which we have talked about before. Serial killers have made their wives write letters for them. It's like, I forget what specifically. We literally, like, didn't cover it that long ago.
The Sunset Strip murder?
Yes.
Yeah. But she also eventually joined in.
Yeah. Because why let him have all the fun?
Well, that does happen. Like, it does usually start off, you know, like serial killers, when they have female partners, they edge them into it. It's just a little bit at a time, and then eventually they're killing together.
Or like Leonard Legg's girlfriend, and then Paul Bernardo and his wife.
I was going to say, Charles Ng there. I'm starting to do a lot of different things in my life, and I'm going to start sending out letters, and I'm going to get a dog to lick the stamps.
What, to keep, like, you away from the hard DNA evidence of what you're sending?
No.
Are you going to be sending weird, crude letters like Albert Fish used to do?
You're like, I wish you sit upon a pile of your sweet peanut butter.
There is a Chihuahua mix in the pound right now in Brooklyn named Brooklyn, and I might go buy it.
Isn't that the dog that hates everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's why it's called Brooklyn. Also, how are you going to take care of an animal? You can barely take care of yourself.
It's Brooklyn, baby. It takes care of itself.
That's not true. It's a dog.
Oh, it's
dogs
a
can't get
mix.
A job and feed itself. I can't go to the store.
I can feed it. every time I have a bite of something, I throw another bite on the floor.
You're gonna do to that dog what my family did to our dog.
Oh.
Now, the whole theory about Deeding's wife sending the letter, that's pretty wild speculation. It could have just as likely been that whoever sent the letter handed it to a female postal worker and she put the stamp on herself.
This is my favorite part.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
However, Deeming does match the psychological profile worked up by the FBI Behavioral Sciences Unit. This is what their profile said. Age 28 to 36, a domineering mother, an absent father, carried a knife or knives. Deeming was arrested with 20 and suffered from a venereal disease contracted by a prostitute. In addition, many credible ripperologists believe that the ripper was a sailor, a job that Deeming held for most of his life.
And they say that the reason why is because of the shoes. They say a lot of times because of rubber shoes. Mm-hmm. They were also very, I guess, rare? I don't fucking know.
They're good? The rubber shoes are what you want, huh?
Yeah, I guess they made you easy to sneak. But grip. Yes. Sneak and grip. On a little cat's paws.
Yeah, for a boat. That would make sense.
Yeah. But that's not to say that there aren't problems with Deeming as a suspect. Since Deeming had so many aliases, it's entirely possible he could have been present at the time of the murders under a name not known to the investigators. But that is, of course, like speculation. He might have been in prison. He might not have. But
if he was just feeling jaunty this morning, he's just like, yeah, the name is Dr. Vlad Cheerio.
Yeah, but that does not rule him out.
Sure, but it doesn't also solidify him.
No, absolutely not. No, I'm saying that there are definitely problems with this. There's nothing that solidifies anything to anybody.
I think he's the one.
Interesting.
Yeah, he's either Jack the Ripper or a moonshiner.
But that is the thing. But also, if it's true that he did kill a woman outside of his family, right? I wonder if I would like to find out whether or not that woman looked like his wife. Because what you'd hear about is like serial killers a lot of time kill people that remind them of people that they hate. And I understand looking at your family and being like, this group's gotta go. But I also understand, but if you see somebody who looks just like your wife out in the street, right, I mean, and you hate your wife, you're probably like, yeah, there she is again! She never dies! And then you have to, like, kill her too, you know?
So you fantasize about killing Jackie Zabrowski?
No!
That's what it seems
only
like.
Only if I lived with her.
I see.
And also, you know, the Deeming MO, it doesn't match up quite as well as I'd like. Deeming was known to hide his victims, including the possible victim he may have killed after being released from Hull Prison in 1891. And concerning the syphilis psychosis, Deeming had only lived with the disease for less than a year in the autumn of 1888. And the psychosis takes much longer than that to develop as a symptom.
But don't you go pretty much immediately impotent?
Sometimes.
Oh, God, that's a bad gamble.
Most guys do go immediately impotent. Like, for example, Randolph Churchill from the last episode. He went pretty... He was impotent, and they say that's why. He ordered William Gull to start the whole Freemason thing because he was mad because his dick didn't work.
So does your body, like, feel it when it no longer can have a baby?
What?
You know?
We can never have children.
Well, we can have children. But the penis, we're not impotent.
You can get horny, and then your penis doesn't work.
It doesn't rise up.
It's literally the cause for what I imagine is most horrific events that have happened on the face of the planet have come from men not being able to get a hard-on.
But as far as I can tell, there's nothing to definitively rule out Deeming as a suspect. And as an interesting postscript to the Deeming story, when Deeming was finally hanged, the people of Whitechapel wrote a song to commemorate the occasion.
On the 21st of May, Frederick Deeming passed away. On the scaffold, he did say, Ta-ra-da-boom-da-day. This is a happy day, an East End holiday. The Ripper's gone away. The Ripper's gone away.
The happiest day for these local yokels was watching a man die.
That was the happiest day for anybody in 1880.
They gotta get a Frasier. They gotta get a Seinfeld.
They watched house fires like it was television.
Right, that's right. The guy was running across.
But also, we had the same thing when Montague Druid also died. The cops also said, we got our Ripper now. He just pulled him out of the Thames. Mm. They're just really excited to have gotten the Ripper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anybody that could have been the Ripper, they were pretty excited when that person was killed.
Sure.
Yeah.
But obviously, he's got his pros and his cons.
Yeah.
My big thing is that it would be hard to know Whitechapel because it's just so dark there. But I guess if you're around looking for prostitutes all the time.
He was in and out of Whitechapel a ton.
It's like, I've only been to Harry Potter World in Orlando twice, and I know that place like the back of my hand now.
Hold on a second. You've been there twice?
Yeah. For Christmas times, both with the family. All love it. And it's a gigantic shopping mall. It's like a money vacuum that you just show up and they're just like, you want to feel like a wizard? It's only $75 for this hat.
So twice, the Harry Zabrowski tribe have just rampaged Harry Potter.
Oh, tromping around, drinking her butterbeer. Me screaming, smile, smile, everyone smile.
Horrifying for the poor people that work there. Some days they don't want to be a wizard, but they have to be when the Zabrowskis are around.
Absolutely, because we demand it.
But as compelling as Deeming is, just as compelling is a man who was under our noses the entire time. That man is Joseph Barnett, the boyfriend of Mary Kelly.
This is interesting.
Interesting.
This is, again,
it's a little too interesting.
Of course. Right. All of this is a little too interesting. I wonder if he was related to our Kevin Barnett.
Could be.
You think maybe deep down?
We'll have to know. If there's anything about him loving birds, then we'll know that he is.
Barnett was an East End lifer born in 1858 as the fourth child of four sons and a daughter. And true to the East End, Barnett's father died when Joseph was six from the old-timey disease pleurisy, possibly as a result from his father suffering from the consumption.
Is this just another 1800s, just like you waste away until you're a skeleton disease?
I mean, he probably had the consumption, and then through consumption, pleurisy took over.
What's pleurisy?
It seems like everybody had, they're suffering from the drug crocodile.
Everyone is just turning into street muck.
Just skins are falling off what was that great movie, Dead Again, or the one with the wonderful Meryl Streep.
Death Becomes Her.
That's a great one. Your skin's falling off. Yeah.
Now, 7 years after Barnett's father died, Joseph's mother inexplicably and mysteriously disappeared without a word or a trace, leaving the Barnett kids to fend for themselves.
I think I got an explanation. I think she didn't want to be a mom anymore.
Yeah, because it's a nightmare world full of hell goblins.
I literally just go do anything else. Just don't be here anymore. Why the fuck would you want to stay at Whitechapel?
No, I didn't.
I just saw one, to be like, all right, shall we enjoy yourself playing? It seemed to be a train is pulling in. I gotta see if I can catch it.
Run.
Just grabbing onto any train that's pulling out of town.
It's one of those cartoons where their legs become a wheel and then just like zoom on out of there.
Now, Joseph was traumatized from this and developed a stutter. He would also later display symptoms of echolalia, a mental disorder suggesting autism or schizophrenia, in which a person repeats back words and phrases that are said to them.
In which a person repeats back words and phrases that are said to them.
In which a person repeats back words and phrases that are said to them.
In which a person repeats words back and phrases that are said to them.
Echolalia.
Echolalia.
I got about 2 more minutes where I can handle that.
But apparently, it's also, it's a sign of autism, which shows that, like, he had some kind of weird mental disorder and probably, again, very unattractive to be a mother to.
I don't know. I mean, honestly, if he is autistic, he might be the smartest person in Whitechapel, because autism does require an extreme focus, and oftentimes there's hidden talents that just need to be discovered. Yeah.
Interesting that you say that,
actually,
Kissel.
It is interesting.
Accidentally
that
very good.
No, that was on purpose. I'm not the debunker here.
Yeah, actually, Joseph had no trouble intellectually. He was actually very well spoken. He could read and write exceptionally well. He was a smart guy by all accounts, but being an East Ender, he, like his father before him, worked as a fish porter his entire life. Fish porters unloaded and transported fish packed in large trunks weighing almost 100 pounds each. They carried these trunks on their heads using specially designed hats named bobbins.
Cute.
Ooh, it's like the Tropicana girl.
Yeah.
And that often left those porters bald as a cue ball.
Literally?
No way.
Their job.
You cannot go bald by putting something on your head.
100 pounds constantly rubbing on your head all day long, every day, for 12 hours a day?
Apparently, they said most fish porters, that's how you knew who the fish porters were, because they were bald by the age of 25. They're in Whitechapel, covered in fish guts and prostitute shit.
With any luck, they'll think I'm a friar. I don't know if that's how you go bald. I think maybe just the genetics of the people who would be in that lot of life
might be
more of a hairless people.
Now, while Joseph wasn't bald just yet, he was enormously strong, having done this work for 10 years by the time he met a beautiful young prostitute named Mary Kelly.
Now, we again remember, beautiful is put into a very special terms when it comes to Whitechapel.
Yes, but she was still beautiful for the time.
She was a Whitechapelite.
She was a Whitechapel 8, which is technically a San Bernardino 3.
Well, California has very high standards.
What I would say is that she also just wasn't physically actively melting in front of him.
Yes, that's,
so she
that's
was
an eight.
Fine, and so he became obsessed with her.
Yeah, yes. See, Joseph tended to look down on prostitutes, but in the case of Mary, he overlooked this fact, and the two moved in together the day after they met for the first time in 1887. Barnett, single at 29, with a heavy stutter and, of course, also the echolalia, he felt like the luckiest boy in town, and he pretty quickly became emotionally and sexually obsessed with her.
Yeah, hey there, Mary. I just gotta say, I'm just most impressed that you could just stop prostituting for a second so we could go on a date tonight.
I never stop prostituting.
I never stop prostituting. Why did you say that?
I prostitute all the time.
I prostitute all the time. Don't make me say that. Every time you say that, I say that.
I love the gush.
I love the gush
of men.
I love the gush of men.
So I
don't make me say it again.
I'm actively prostituting.
I'm actively a prostitute.
Sucking
I hate prostitutes that make me suck. Okay. Sucking. And
okay.
No, from Mary's point of view, Barnett was a nice change of pace from the usual dregs she knocked around with. For while Joseph was a fisherman, he was intelligent and also a bit of a fancy boy who always wore top hats.
God. Okay.
So also, he was weirdly bald from carrying boxes and trunks of fish dick on his head.
The best he smelt like was like new fish. Like, there's no way he ever smelt good. Like, it's just.
Well, she was a Whitechapel prostitute. She's not doing great either.
I guess not. I mean, it's just usually when someone drops trow, the smell in the room gets worse, but you get a feeling it was a nice relief. Yeah. From fish guts and overall bass.
Your balls are actually the best part of you.
I think that would make a lot of sense.
But more importantly to Mary, Barnett was more than happy to pay her way so he could keep her off the streets and out of prostitution. And this was precisely the reason why Mary Kelly had a room while the other victims all stayed in doss houses. She was the lowest form of kept woman. But this arrangement only worked as long as Joseph had that steady fish money coming in.
And it was not very good either.
Baby, we got that fish money coming in, baby.
It was like £3 a week.
Yeah, it was very little, yeah. And sure enough, after 10 years working in Billingsgate Market, Joseph was suddenly fired, most likely for stealing fish. See, Barnett was eager to please Mary, so he was constantly buying her gifts, quote, such as meat and other things, as he later put it.
So he would buy it.
He would steal meat and bring it to her, kind of like a cat, or like the dad from Scrooge, where he showed me like, that's $20 worth of veal.
Yeah, it's sort of like a Lady and the Tramp type thing, I guess.
Yeah, the other things that he talked about, that was probably fish he was smuggling out of the market to give to Mary Kelly.
Is she the penguin? I mean, why would... Oh, thank you for the fish.
I got a berry fish. I hope that makes you smile.
That's my favorite.
That's my favorite. That's why I brought it to you, because I knew you'd say something nice for once.
Okay, get out of here. I got a prostitute.
Okay, get out of here. I got a prostitute. This is disgusting. I brought you up to 4 pence worth of fish guts.
Well, I'm about to be swimming in...
Well, I'm about to be swimming in cum.
Yes. There you go.
After Barnett was fired from the fish market, he managed to get work here and there selling oranges as sailors... Scurvy. You got to get that scurvy. You got to get that vitamin C in there. Yeah. So there was a lot of orange sellers around. But the income wasn't anywhere near what he was pulling down as a fisherman. So Kelly, who had become accustomed to this fish and meat lifestyle that Barnett had provided
her. Oh, this high class, highfalutin
Mary
Kelly.
This is how Kevin Barnett's future girlfriends must feel. Because now that he can afford the meat and the fish to bring home, because he's working on that very wonderful job in television in Los Angeles.
Yeah, of course.
Yep. Mary Kelly returned to the streets once more to make her living the way she had always made it.
Oh.
And this put Barnett in a bit of a pickle. See, from what I can tell, Mary didn't like Barnett all that much and actually seemed to have actively despised him.
Apparently, she openly talked about how much she disliked him, and they got into many vicious fights.
Yeah, because Mary Kelly was a mean drunk, as we all know. And so after Barnett lost his job, there was no real reason for Mary to stick around besides the room, and even then, that probably wouldn't be around for much longer. So Joseph came up with a plan. As we said in our first episode, the series of 11 killings that became known as the Whitechapel Murders were kicked off by the stabbing death of Martha Tabram and the beating death of Emma Smith, who had been beaten to death by 3 street toughs. These killings would have no doubt affected Mary, who may or may not have known the women personally.
What actually is interesting, too, is that witnesses and people with, like,
witnesses, huh?
I know. Completely incredible. But they have said that he would say he would read the stories out loud to Mary purposely to make her upset.
Yeah. Well, but she was also asking him to read the story.
She can't read.
Oh, she can't read. He can read. Well, I think there's a lot of upsides here.
Yeah. And they all lived on the same street, both the victims and Mary Kelly, and most likely would have at least been familiar with each other, all belonging to the same subset of hard-drinking local prostitutes.
You know, I just thought about him stealing fish in his top hat, and he comes home, and she's like, you didn't bring me any fish, and then he lifts up the top hat, and it all comes falling down. Oh, I brought you gifts, dear.
See, this is the Heathcliff world I imagine.
This sounds kind of
happening in Whitechapel.
If this was real love, it would be kind of sweet.
Yeah, Ben, this is what happens when Heathcliff becomes real.
Hey,
that's what this is.
That's what this is. This is, Joseph Barnett is Heathcliff.
Oh, look at that. A lot of friends and a car that doesn't work unless you hit it just so.
And so when Barnett lost his job, he resorted to the most desperate of measures. He would kill local prostitutes to scare Mary off the streets and back into his arms. Now, this isn't as much of a stretch as you might imagine. It's not a very long leap. It's a pretty long leap, but it's not a very long leap from gutting fish to mutilating women. In fact, one physician who was stationed at London Hospital during the murders and had spent time in the North Sea said that, quote,
the great surgical skill which Jack the Ripper used to apply to his female victims could easily have been picked up by a man accustomed to boning and filleting fish. Women are just like fish.
Yeah, that's what it sort of seems like, and I would have to say there's a huge difference.
It seems like it.
Yeah. It's a leap, definitely. It's not an impossible leap.
That surgeon was just thinking about gutting fish.
Right.
Imagining gutting women. And completely hard thinking about both.
It's unique to that doctor there.
And so Jack the Ripper claimed his first victim, Mary Nichols, on August 31st, 1888, shortly after Barnett lost his job. And 8 days later, Annie Chapman was found dead. And while there isn't a direct connection to Nichols, Barnett, and Mary Kelly, Chapman is a little more interesting. In the past, Chapman had stayed at 30 Dorset Street, just 2 doors away from Barnett and Kelly's apartment, and one newspaper would claim that Chapman and Kelly had been friends at one point. Now, it could be that the killing of a person unknown to Kelly didn't have the desired effect, and so Barnett not only moved on to someone that Kelly actually knew to drive the point home a little further, but also upped the ante on the mutilation.
Because that would make her extra scared, because now it happened to somebody you know. Mm-hmm. Now that it's happening to somebody you know, like, it's like, how do you feel now? Like, your best friend that we just saw, the one that, like she would take the fish, but instead of holding her hands, she put it inside of her vagina.
Yeah. Okay. So he's killing a bunch of prostitutes to scare, Mary Kelly. But it would be hilarious if, first of all, she didn't even realize that anyone was going missing. Then he'd be like, God damn it. You know, I gotta keep my kill. But it just seems like a real roundabout way to get her to come back to him.
You say that.
Yeah.
Well, it just doesn't. It seems like quite a mental stretch to.
Yeah.
You say that.
Yeah. Now, 3 weeks went by without it. And by the way, none of this is really in court records or anything like that. This is just cobbled together from people who kind of knew them.
Ripperologists.
Yeah.
Now, 3 weeks went by without a murder, and things had started to die down a bit. Now, it could be that Kelly was slowly starting to return to the streets, for the murders would escalate once more with the double event when Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes both met their fate on the same night. Now, these women are also all loosely connected. Stride was living at 38 Dorset Street, only a couple dozen yards from Barnett and Kelly, and Eddowes was known to have sometimes sheltered in the abandoned shed located at 26 Dorset Street, the same shed that adjoined Barnett and Kelly's apartment.
And what a lovely shed, I imagine.
Beautiful
it was.
Shed. Yeah.
Beautiful shed. You know, you ever see tiny houses, big living?
Yeah.
Not like that, because it's not all slathered with jism and blood and, right. and shit, prostitute shit.
Yeah.
But kind of like that.
Yeah, that tiny house is show. They stink.
They're trailers.
Yeah.
Now, it's not only likely, but probable, if all this is true, it is not only likely, but probable that Kelly knew Eddowes personally, or at the very least knew her by sight. She may have even known Barnett. Hell, All of the women, at the very least, may have known Barnett as a familiar face, as he had worked and lived in the East End all his life, besides being the boyfriend of a local prostitute, particularly the boyfriend of the pretty local prostitute.
And you know he was a quotation mark fucking boyfriend, and they all made fun of him Sex in the City style wherever he went.
Well, I think that he was a great boyfriend to Mary Kelly, and now he's just trying to scare her straight.
Think about
that's
that.
What this is,
how
right?
How good a boyfriend you gotta be to kill all her friends,
right?
To make her safe.
Well, now it sounds like an abusive relationship.
Good boyfriend. I'd say advanced boyfriend techniques.
Kill her friends to make her feel safe.
So she doesn't have anyone to turn to except for you, and then obviously we'll see what happens.
Now this. The fact that Barnett knew all these women, not the fact that, but the possibility that Barnett knew all these women, it could have enabled him to get the jump on his victims, causing them to let their guard down upon seeing them. And since Barnett was a lifelong East Ender, he knew every single street which he could escape down to avoid detection. And unlike many of the other suspects, there is actually a bit of evidence leaking Barnett, although it is, like everything else, extremely circumstantial.
Always.
A constable followed a line from the Catherine Eddowes murder in Mitre Square to the Bloody Apron on Goulston Street over to a bloody sink in Miller's Court. Straight line between the three sites. The constable never gave the exact location, but it is known that there was a water tap in Miller's Court right outside Barnett and Kelly's room. And not only did Barnett live close to all his victims, he lived close to all of the murder sites.
And what we know about serial killers is that most of the time, they work in their neighborhood.
A lot of times they do, yeah.
But weren't there always just piles of bloody clothes and every sink was full of blood?
Yeah.
Can't you just stop by any place?
But that was thicker, newer blood. They remember the older blood patterns because they have to.
Well, that's how you give directions. Yeah.
Yes.
Take a left by the big, by the 3-week-old blood pile.
Now, if one were to draw circles around the scene of the murders, the center would be roughly on Dorset Street. Now, this falls in line with the circle hypothesis, which says that a large percentage of serial killers live within a few minutes' walk of their crimes. Now, concerning the Jack the Ripper letters, if they are indeed genuine, it can very easily be said that the aim of these letters were to frighten and terrify, particularly the line,
"I am down on whores, and I shan't quit ripping them until I do get buckled. Ha-ha!"
Now, Barnett knew that these messages would reach Mary. Now, Mary's fear was so great that she would have Joseph go out and buy all the newspapers that carried Ripper news and have him read them aloud to her.
Ooh, that's what happens in Florence Jenkins Walker or whatever the hell that movie is.
Don't even bring it up anymore. That movie sucked so much dick. We had to watch it twice.
Yeah.
And not only would it frighten Mary, but it also served to show the police and the world just how clever Joseph Barnett really was. Hmm. Now, the more we look into Joseph, the more we see similarities between him and the classic profile of a serial killer. He was an intelligent man working a menial job below his potential, which is common among serial killers such as Dennis Rader, who was a dog catcher and security guard, and also enjoyed showing the press and the police how much smarter than them he was until that actually got him caught.
That's if those first two letters were the Dear Boss letters were real. But if the From Hell letter is real, right, to George Lusk, there's a thing apparently, which is really interesting, is a part of what is when that one credible witness in this fucking theory came forward and said that, like, he saw that Jack the Ripper was wearing rubber shoes, right? We were saying that it puts him to the sailors. But also, the only other people that were wearing rubber shoes in Whitechapel at the time were members of the Whitechapel Vigilance Committee, which means whoever he saw that light could have possibly been a part of the committee, and also have known George Lusk's personal address, and what they also know is the fact that he, Joseph, was a member of the Vigilance Committee. He was the part, so maybe he knew from the inside and who to send the letter to, and so if the From Hell letter is real, it could have also possibly been for Joseph Barnett with the same motive.
I think you could use a rubber shoe as a stamp.
I'm saying
if you ink it up on the bottom and put a little etch in there.
Now, further as far as the profile goes, Joseph came from a family with an absent father and a cold and distant mother, much like Henry Lee Lucas and dozens of others. Joseph suffered from echolalia, which can be symptomatic of schizophrenia, which is common among extremely violent serial killers. Many times, the initial kill is triggered by a huge change or stress of some sort, and the Ripper killings began very soon after Joseph lost his job. And keeping Mary off the streets might have been just the excuse he was looking for to begin killing. So after the double murder, the streets of Whitechapel virtually empty of prostitutes, and we know that Kelly was no longer on the streets, as their landlord later reported that the couple had stopped paying rent around this time.
But it also
and that's the only concern for the landlord. He doesn't care about all the missing prostitutes. He just needs his 2 pence.
Well, obviously, and they were also so belligerently drunk together all the time that it almost kind of seemed like they were on the same page and kind of having a good time. Yeah. Like, apparently, they showed up together to drunkenly scream at the landlord about how he'll get his rent when he's going to get his rent. And that's teamwork, and couples should be a team.
Yeah. I agree with that. Was like Charlie Sheen when he went through his tiger blood prostitute phase, which I think he's still in.
1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors. It's a waste. Don't waste hours on apps. Besides appetizers, that's the kind of apps I like. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Did you know that empanada is already Spanish? I didn't. Thanks, Babbel. Did you know that burrito is already Spanish? Wow! I just got to learn all the rest. And eventually, I'm going to be eating downtown Mexico. Thanks, Babbel. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at Babbel.com/left. Get up to 60% off at Babbel.com/left, spelled Babbel.com/left. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But Mary, forced to stay in a 12-by-12 room with a man she couldn't stand, decided to bring home a homeless prostitute named Julie Venturni to live with them. Now, Joseph wasn't happy about this.
This is what?
Exactly. 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 Alan Moore in From Hell.
It would be fun for a bit.
A second. But the problem is that she's a lower level prostitute than Mary. Mary's already.
Well, that's perfect because Mary, you know how this works in relationships when you have threesomes. You never get a girl that's better than the woman that you're with.
Exactly. You have to choose somebody that she's not going
to
be jealous of.
The woman gets to choose.
She's going to choose. She's going to choose somebody that she's okay with you fucking, right?
Lesser,
but in the same way, in From Hell, they were like showing me, and like, she was like, you want to get a piece of this bang tail? And they were like, and she went down and started going down on her and stuff, and then Joseph's being like, never watching them fucking go down on each other. Meanwhile, like, he's wrong entirely because that's great. But also, there's another theory. That's one theory, is that maybe Mary Kelly was possibly had some sort of lesbian tendencies. Right, she invited.
Sure, possibly.
Possibly.
I mean, yeah.
But also,
well,
there's
all the men smelled like fish, and that's if they had a job.
Yes, that's literally an employed man.
Well, I mean, there's one theory that she possibly had lesbian tendencies, but the most likely theory is that she was trying to force out Joseph,
or she was afraid of Joseph, and brought somebody in there to be her backup. Like, literally, brought somebody in here. Now that I'm trapped in here, right? Mm-hmm. Mary Kelly's I'm living off of this man. He is maybe a monster. I'm noticing he's coming home covered in blood. If he's Jack the Ripper, he is not. It's not a subtle murder. So he's coming in, just been like all agitated from ripping all night. He's finally like drunk enough to be sated while you're sitting there after the streets are empty because all your friends are fucking dead. So you're sitting there really nervous all the time, and eventually just like, maybe I'll bring someone in here to kind of help me Bowie against him, because my boyfriend, quote unquote captor, quote unquote like benefactor, is getting more and more unpredictable.
Yeah, and this actually made him even more unpredictable, because he was afraid that bringing in this Julie girl was going to drag Mary back into prostitution. And so Joseph gave her an ultimatum. It's me or her. Unfortunately for Joseph, Mary very quickly chose her new friend, and Joseph moved out, possibly taking the key to the room with him.
Because the key had been missing for weeks. That was like a weird thing where it's like he had something. I think that he, if that's true, whether or not he's Jack the Ripper, he wanted control over Mary Kelly.
But we do know, but he didn't like the previous guy, what was it, Deemer?
Deeming.
He's a murderer no matter what. But this guy, he hasn't killed anybody unless he is Jack the Ripper, correct?
Yeah. Yes.
So he's just trying to get a woman to not be a prostitute or a sex worker or a lady of the extravagant night.
A friendly woman.
A friendly lady. But so he's not really that horrible.
Advanced boyfriend techniques. The means begets the ends. The ends begets the means, right?
Well, unless he is Jack the Ripper, in which case he's horrible. But yeah, the idea of just being like, you're a prostitute, I would, like Pretty Woman, Richard Gere. He wouldn't be happy if she went back to work.
I mean, really what this is that if, you know, this story is essentially Mary Kelly taking advantage of an autistic man named Joseph Barnett.
Possibly.
Unless he's Jack the Ripper. If he is not Jack the Ripper.
If he's not
Jack the Ripper, then, you know, Joseph Barnett is the victim here because he's just some guy with a stutter that is trying to get a girlfriend and then she's just like, give me more money.
Yeah, he's selling
oranges to make ends meet.
He's literally outselling oranges, and I don't imagine a lot of people are buying oranges.
I don't think so.
Sailors. A lot of sailors are buying oranges. Yeah, because you had to not get scurvy.
Whitechapel also doesn't seem the place like that would have a lot of orange trees lying around, you know? So that's interesting.
See, Joseph, despite being rejected, he still came back every day to give Kelly money when he could, hoping to buy his way back in. And when Julie moved out, the homeless prostitute, Barnett thought that it was time for him to move back in. But Mary didn't want that because her life was a hell of a lot easier now that Barnett was just showing up and giving her money rather than sitting with her in a tiny room repeating everything that he said day in, day out.
God, just hours of that.
Just hours of that. Kelly decided that she wanted to live in the room alone. And the theory goes, if Barnett is the Ripper, that didn't sit too well with him. On November 8th, the two got into a huge fight about the living situation, after which Joseph stormed out and Mary went out and got trashed at a local pub, taking two different men home that night.
Ooh.
And in the early morning
hours,
it is possible that Barnett returned to the apartment, let himself in using the key he had stolen, and slaughtered the object of his affection in a fashion so brutal it would become one of the most famous murders of all time.
Now, it's just a matter of, can you go from normal, if this is true, can you go from normal to that level of brutal killer that fast?
No.
Right? It's like, that's the thing, right? So it's like Fred Deeming, on your end, he's murdered before. Or right. Now he's building up to murder. Or he's done a bunch of small crimes, which is the common serial killer pattern.
He's a lifelong con man and thief. He's been in and out of jail for thievery. He's been in and out of jail for fraud.
He's like Charles Manson.
Yeah, he's been doing thievery since he was a kid. You know, like, so this is a lifelong thing for him.
And this guy's been working his whole life, making an honest paycheck.
True. But it's like, so Fred Deeming, he maybe slips up and kills somebody, and now since he's contracted syphilis, that is enough, you think, for him to jump to the level of murder that this, right? Product killing.
Because he escalates each time.
Yes.
You know, every time, because he's been going in and out of Whitechapel for a while now, visiting prostitutes in Whitechapel from this new rail line in from Liverpool to London. So he's already going in and out of Whitechapel for prostitution. So he already knows the area. So it makes sense that he would return to Whitechapel to use as his killing fields because that was the same place where he first contracted syphilis.
Yes. Right. Yes, because it's symbolic.
Yeah, right. It's a very symbolic killing. Well, but on the other hand, it's too symbolic. It's too good.
But also, would him being a stranger be a problem? This is my question. If Whitechapel is, so there's 1,200 prostitutes in this densely packed, like, triangle of streets.
Roughly.
Right? There's this area. Do you think that level of familiarity, that kind of that packed together, do you think that either makes people blend in or stick out? Like, so does Barnett, being somebody that everybody knows, does that make it much easier for him to be Jack the Ripper because he can approach people and people know who he is and they trust him already and he knows the streets and he's a local, so everybody just kind of assumes that he's in on what's going on? And that would Deeming not stick out like a store thumb because he comes in from out of town and nobody really knows who this guy is? And if he looks so distinct because of his eyes, it seemed like you'd be seeing that all the time.
Well, I think what that tells you is that Whitechapel, there are a ton of people coming in and out. You know that we know that the aristocracy is always coming into Whitechapel to get their jollies off. A lot of people are coming in and out of Whitechapel constantly, and it's also a very transient area because it's right near a port. So they're used to people coming in and out all the time. And Joseph Barnett, if he was Jack the Ripper, then I think somebody would have noticed, since he was a familiar face, people would have noticed him being around all of the murders every single time. They would have noticed, like, oh shit, Joseph was was right over here. Oh shit, Joseph was over here as well. He was at all these murders. And really, since Deeming had such a distinctive face, he was seen around all the murders. People did remember him a lot more. So Deeming was actually seen at the murder scenes, or at least near the murder scenes, or at the very least in Whitechapel the night of. And furthermore, as far as the night that he was in Whitechapel, that dressmaker saw him the next day. He was reading the newspaper, and she said when he read about the double event, she said that he got extremely agitated.
That's not also a good sign.
But this is my thing. What if Long Liz was not killed by Jack the Ripper? I think
That is extremely possible.
I'm starting to think, number one, like, none of this happened. I'm going insane. But what if Long Liz was not a Jack the Ripper victim? I think if she was not, it points towards Burnett, right? And points towards building up that idea that he was killed. He is going nuts with obsession over Mary Kelly, that he's willing to kill her friends in order to keep her inside. I think that there is a... I think the problem is the mutilation. That is the thing where it's just like, that's a very big... Product killing is a different type of murder.
Yeah.
That is a sexual deviancy. That's something that's really driven, that would have shown during other things. Like, he would have had to have been pissing his pants and killing animals and shit like that and coming his pants when he's killing animals.
Well, my biggest thing about Barnett is that Barnett's too much of a story. After all the stuff that we've covered, all the serial killers that we've covered, it's never that clean. There is never a story. It's always a mess. It's always madness. There's nothing there that's an actual narrative. It's always just insanity. And for me, Fred Deeming is insanity. For me, Fred Deeming comes in like a whirlwind and kills all of these women in a very messy fashion. But Joseph Barnett, there's too much motivation, there's too much of a tale there, and it's never a movie, it's never a story. And for me, Barnett is such a movie.
Well, also, we're reading it from the perspective of historians that have pieced this together as a story.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like they're piecing it so you could see, like, they're presenting it, right? Yeah. Saying, like, this is how maybe it could work. But one thing I will also point towards Burnett is that Burnett was actually investigated by Aberline. He was pulled in first to identify the body of Mary Kelly, but he was so strange when they brought in to identify the body that what they did was, back in the day, is that they would have all the witnesses in a big hall, and the witnesses would come in and speak.
They call it an inquest.
Yes, and it's just like they would come, so they all watch it. It was very interesting to see how people behaved, where it's just like he showed up and he said he was in two different places that night. It was like this like weird thing. Obvious, he fucked up his own testimony because no one's reliable, because fucking Whitechapel, even them, they're not even reliable to themselves. So it's like they are, so it's strange. It seemed like it was like this weird thing. So he was on a list for a while.
But a lot of Barnett stuff comes from, a lot of the Barnett story comes from newspapers, which, you know, newspapers at the time were the most unreliable things possible.
As opposed to now. Totally accurate now.
Yeah, but I think there's a lot more, I guess, concrete evidence as far as what Deeming's actual travels were. And I think Barnett, the thing is about him, I don't know. It doesn't feel right, but it is also possible that Jack the Ripper was only the first four, or even just those three, and that what it could be
Marcus is starting to smile way too much.
Now, it could be that Deeming killed Mary Nichols, Annie Chapman, and Catherine Eddowes. Deeming killed those three. Elizabeth Stride was killed by someone altogether different, but Mary Kelly was killed by Joseph Barnett.
Yeah. I could completely buy that. And actually, because I'm starting to think that too, is that I honestly, you know, it's been a long time.
It's been a very long time.
It's been like 140 something years. Am I wrong? Was that good math?
It's about 130.
All
right. Right around there.
And so
it's 1 year off from being 130.
Almost 130 years. You know, Jack the Ripper didn't get caught.
Jack the Ripper didn't get caught. But, you know, this could also be the same thing as the Boston Strangler, because we know that Albert DeSalvo did not commit all of the Boston Strangler murders. He probably committed one of them, and in fact, it was probably more like three people that committed the Boston Strangler murders.
Well,
it could be that the Jack the Ripper murders were also three people as well, and that would make sense that, you know, Elizabeth Stride and Catherine Eddowes, the night of the double event, it makes a lot more sense that that is two different people rather than one person running from one scene to the other.
Yes. And unless, course, you believe that he's a roving sex maniac.
Yeah.
Which is possible.
Which is also very possible that he didn't get his jollies off with Stride, so he moved on to Eddowes. But it also, you know, I do kind of like that, you know, let's go for everyone's right.
Yeah.
A conclusion where everybody's right, like the end of the movie Clue. They all did it.
They all did
it. I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife.
But I will put it this way. Jack the Ripper is still, it's a really compelling case.
Yeah.
Well, there's a reason why we did 5 hours of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Read all of the stuff on it. It's very compelling. You'll be a blabbering idiot as well.
That's exciting. I do blame the media. Media is always in the crosshairs here, but this is one of the first examples where the media, I think, drives these stories.
It was the first example of the media driving the story. That's why it's so huge. It's a great study in both criminology and in journalism.
And back to the idea of many people, you know, you read an article about this, and next thing you know, you're inspired to go and do it yourself. I mean, I think that's what happened with Zodiac. I think it's just a bunch of copycat people, and I think it could be the same thing here. Media doesn't take any responsibility whatsoever. They just want to sell papers.
It's true.
And I don't think it does the... It's not for the greater good.
Because they can't. They look at responsibility. I was actually reading a very interesting article last night about people trying to put responsibility into the idea of how we use our cell phones and the fact that we're addicted to them, like our behavior. And then maybe they should start thinking about the responsibility of app makers to the fact that thinking about the fact that they're ruining our lives by how addictive the apps are.
Do you know what I do? I don't pay for anything. On my games. I get the games because they always want you to pay.
But then you plateau and it's the most boring thing on the face of the planet.
No, then you just stop playing until they let you play again. They make you take like an hour or 24 hours off. That's what I do. Anyway, wow. So Barnett or Deeming, those are the two biggest suspects
for us.
For last podcast on the left. Unbelievable.
I mean, Deeming's my man.
All right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Barnett, it's the thing upon re-going to. It's like, I can see it. But at the same time, I can't because it's such a big jump.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Deeming as well because I just don't want to believe someone who sells fresh produce could hurt anybody or anything.
I don't know. Why the way they carve up them fruit? Mm. Two oranges smashed next to each other to me looks like a set of breasts.
The other day, because I'm trying to lose weight, I'm on a new drug called Ally, which captures the fat, by the way.
Oh, you're doing this shit again?
Oh, it's wonderful. Oh, it's the best.
Is this
speed? Are you just taking speed again?
No.
You did this same...
No.
His feet are connected to the ceiling, and he's been doing this upside down like a bat. Now, my question, though, is this the same thing that made all the gel bond, like, all this fat gel together, and then you just shat clear gel?
I remember that.
Yeah, years ago. Yeah, went back when I was also getting healthy, and I lost about 30 pounds.
Okay.
And it's all in the sewer system. So that's kind of disgusting if you think about it. But I did buy some mango off the street for the first time in the Ziploc bag. Some of the best mango I ever had.
Yeah, dude, I eat a shitload of mango all the time.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying I don't want to believe people who sell produce could kill, because I'm quite fond of their food.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, five parts.
Wow.
Well, actually, four parts and then two. I don't know anymore
ancillary
how much it's
parts.
Been.
Yeah.
Yes.
We did it, though.
We did it.
And we solved the case.
That's right.
Yeah, we solved the case. Yeah. Marianne Nichols, Annie Chapman, and Catherine Eddowes killed by Fred Deeming. Elizabeth Stride, person unknown. And Mary Jane Kelly by Joseph Barnett. But I would say that, probably Deeming.
All right. Well, I'm not. I did learn a lot. And the most thing that I learned, the most important thing I learned, was that the fat guy from Nuns on the Run was also in Harry Potter.
He's not in Harry
Potter.
Because
people always tweeted at me.
Yeah.
So thank you for that.
Also in From Hell.
Yes!
Which is the Jack the Ripper thing. That's actually the more important fact.
That is the more important fact.
That's a much more important connection.
And you've been to Harry Potter World twice.
Two times.
Two times. Which is exciting. All right, everyone. Thank you guys so much for listening. And thanks so much for supporting us with the Patreon and all those things. We have a bunch of fun things happening. I want to say shout out to Chicago. We had a wonderful time last weekend. Thank you so much for the great hospitality. And we had a bunch of stuff coming up in the future.
A man attacked you.
Yes, but then he wrote an apology email to me.
Oh, that's so nice.
It was interesting, to say the least. And no hard feelings, of course. Everyone was extremely intoxicated.
Yeah.
And so you have to have that's a good Midwestern time.
Absolutely. Yeah, we've got a lot of live shows coming up. CaveCommentRadio.com/live is where you can get tickets to St. Paul, Ithaca, Salt Lake City, and San Francisco. CaveCommentRadio.com/live is where you can find all of those dates. And of course, if you want to be first in line for our upcoming Texas tour, which is going to be happening in April, we are just a tiny, tiny, tiny bit away from getting all of those dates booked. Houston, Austin, and Dallas, we're going to be coming to in April. If you want to get first crack at those tickets, give to our Patreon. All it takes is $1. If you go to patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft and give just $1, you get advance tickets. ticket sales. So please give to our Patreon if you feel like we deserve it. Thank you so much to everybody who has given to our Patreon. You guys are the absolute fucking best.
You're the best. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Henry Loves You, at Ben Kissel, at Marcus Parks.
I am currently, and I will be, retweeting pet pictures until, for the foreseen future here, because I'm getting a lot of them, and I'm just going to do like 3 a day as opposed to the hundreds that I've tweeted so far.
Because it just seems like a desperate, weird thing after a while, when it gets into the hundreds.
Yeah. Well, I figured I didn't want to be mean to someone who sent me a picture of their pet, because then it'd be like, he's retweeting all of these ones, but he didn't retweet this one.
Well, he wasn't a good enough pet.
No, but every pet is a good enough pet.
I don't know.
If they all seem to be loved. Loved to me.
That's love. That's good.
Isn't that nice?
And then also on Instagram, I'm at Dr. Fantasty, at Marcus Parks, at Ben Kissel One. And then find us on Last Podcast Left on all of the bullshits at LP on the Left. And get off Facebook.
Yeah. And if anyone sent me anything on Facebook, sorry, I dropped out of Facebook like 2 weeks ago. And
I think I'm out.
Yeah,
I'm out.
Pretty sure I'm out of Facebook. So yeah, if you want to get a hold of me about something,
yeah.
Twitter. Like, get a hold of me on Twitter.
They know too much about us. They know too. I am starting to get paranoid.
Yeah,
deeply.
You're starting to get paranoid.
Worse than before. And also, Alex Jones, Joe Rogan thing sent me down another rabbit hole last night, where it's just like, Alex Jones, say what you will about the man.
He's a lunatic.
Yes, but he is also an encyclopedia of conspiracy theory.
It's crazy.
And when he just ticks off stuff, you're like, holy shit, there's a lot going on. Do you know that Darwin did this whole thing where he was hallucinating, and that's a part of how he came up with the theory of evolution, and that possibly he believed that aliens were speaking to his brain?
Are you just repeating what Alex Jones said, or did you look this up on your own?
I looked it up on my own after I heard what he said.
I mean, I think he was just thinking. Darwin was thinking. No, he's a very good performer, obviously.
Very good.
And we got some new t-shirts.
Yes.
We got some Abe Lincoln's Top Hat t-shirts.
Out now? Is that official?
They're out now. Yeah, it is the skull of Abraham Lincoln puking out the American flag.
Oh, and what it's a beautiful flag it is.
Cave Comedy Radio merch.com is ready to go to get that, or our Hail Yourself t-shirt, or our classic logo t-shirt.
Yeah, we got more t-shirts coming in the future. Thanks so much for supporting all the shows. Top Hat, like Marcus just said, Roundtable of Gentlemen, Page 7, Sex and Other Human Activities. All the shows here on CCR are absolutely crushing it. I counted, we had 7 shows in the top 100 on iTunes in 3 different categories.
Let's take it over. Five stars on again. iTunes. Woo!
Not a celebrity driven podcast network, just work that's been put into it. Mm-hmm. We're better than everybody else because of you guys, and because we love talking with you and having a relationship.
Yeah, yes. We're all just buds.
We're all just buds. Hail yourselves, everybody.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Hail me. Mugus delicious.
Mugus delicious.
Leave the prostitutes alone.
Please.
Always. Okay.
We're good to go?
We're good to go.
All right, everybody.
Are you ready for your last podcast and last Patreon? Shut up.
No, don't do it like Holden does it from the round table. Please
shut up. Shut up.
We're not doing it like that.
A Duber One says, go fuck yourself, Trevor.
God. Can't deal with all this. All right, well, I'll just get it going here. Thank you so much for everyone who donated to our Patreon. Laura S., thank you. Rafael Estrada.
Ooh.
Jess. Brandon Douglas. Brent Hauser, thank you, Brent Hauser. Amy Consolation, that's a fun name. JT, Laura McCool, that's good.
I know Laura McCool.
You do.
She's very sweet. She's on Twitter friend.
Oh, nice. Thomas Adrian Walks, I'm happy that you're back doing that. William H. Hinchman, Rebecca Elner, Carrie Jameson, ooh, I like Jameson. Laura Braden, Caitlin Oruska, Sean Power, Luke Herbert, Leslie Mascria. Ooh, I'm doing so well with these names. Alexander Metcalf, Talos Virgin, Andrew Child, Rob P., Matthew McDoyle. Maybe he's related to McCool.
Oh, wow. M. Sanan. Silky Dixon. Marcella Snell.
Ooh, $50. Very good.
Oh, you did very good.
Very good. Wow.
And for that, Marcella, I say... thank you.
Absolutely.
Frank Pocklington, Francisco Valencia, Brandon Wiggins, Samantha Zimmerman.
Uh-oh.
Margaret Hogg, Ben Stonick, Lachlan Marr, Nikki Reed, Ed Moore, Camille Yvonne, Georgia Layton, Faisal John Muhammad, Chris Nunes, Adrian Holmes, Isabella Parsons, Casey Schubert, Brian Robertson, David Fulgeron, and Melissa Small.
Ooh. Got Megan Olin, Ivy Samples, Mignon Ayala, $50 from Mignon.
Wow.
Alexia Peralta, Anthea McClintock, Harrison Nocera, Aaron Corcoran, Emily Van Sullen, Emily Schalschlin, Marguerite, Jacob Kimner, Ellie McKenna, Austin Harriman, Mikey Pibb, Joshua McAllister, Alex Marthaler, $50 as well.
Ooh,
big Brian money. Hughes, Claire Toar, Sarah Kendall, hey Sarah, Joshua Augustus Quinlan, Rebecca Lieber, and Josh Howard Just.
All right, well, here's my list. It's Jessica Calantuno.
Ooh.
Calantuno. I don't think I'm saying that one right. Calantuino. Calantuino.
I think that's Portuguese.
Oh,
exotic. Fancy.
I went to go eat some Peruvian food the other day, but they were closed.
Peruvian?
Peruvian.
So what'd you end up eating?
bar food.
Terrible story.
Okay, Melissa Heinzelman, Alina Hang, Vince. Well, these are tough names now. Siciano? Either way, Vince, thank you. And isn't that nice of you? Jacob Lowry, Juan Rodriguez, Alex Carr, Richard Geese, Coley Wong, Alex Gilbert, Morgan Montesanto.
Ooh, maybe the tomatoes big.
Yeah, get them tomatoes nice. Tyler M., Andrea Ramos, Jacob Beaumont, Nikki Waterman, Parker Slade. Parker Slade, he sounds like a bad guy in every John Hughes movie. Jenny Alvarez, Karen Vaught, Jason Chapa, ooh, the Mess Files, Kirsten Besserard, Alexander Garrett.
Dylan Brunmeyer.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alexandria Garrett.
Thank you.
You may go, I apologize.
Jared Wheatley, Alec Like the Baldwin, Evie, Jordan Marsh, Maureen Fury, Amanda Burke, Krista Just, Liz Boyce, Melissa Blizzard, Daniel Morton, Joshua Funky, hope it's the music, not your butt, stupid.
Well, I don't know about that.
Jennifer Ortiz, Samantha Stevens, Greg Campbell, Amanda Williamson, Frank Just, Trevor Collins, Pat, Alex Resendez, Mallory Weiser, Stephanie Smith. Sounds like a fake name.
Stephanie Smith?
Yeah.
That sounds like a super real name.
Fake name.
Craig Deanger, Jessica Just, Anna Croft, $50, thank you, Anna. James Kruger, Andy Adam Key, Lily Deese, Sarah Youssef, Ashley Garbs, Callie Bonikorski, Molly Scheller, Chastity Rose, Stephanie Pfannensteel.
I like that name.
Pfannensteel. Anna, Rachel Fitchman, Rachel Gottesman, Joshua Finke, Les Knight, Blythe Bourgeois, Bethany McFarland, Burt Havard, Andrew Cash, and Aaron Hood.
All right, here we got Melvin Horner. Love you, Melvin. Maxwell Moody. Lindsay Kopke. Tian Liu. Matthew Patton. Jesse Witt. Justin Colley. Jim Stengeli. Brooke O'Dubs. Oh, I like that. O'Dubs. O'Dubs. Emilio Rodriguez. Oscar Luna. Jeannie Konzenberg. Old Creeping with Armstrong, Clinton D. Borowski, Janelle Powell Fulton, Matthew Crouch, Brian Roger, Logan Bluskowski, Harry just edited their, okay, Harry, Jeremy Lurie.
They lowered their pledge.
Yes, he lowered the pledge. And thank you for that, Harry, because he listened to a few episodes, he said, I've rethought it. But he still contributed, and I'll appreciate that. We'll take that. We love that very much. Jeremy Lurlila, Thomas Mahan, and Elizabeth. Thank you so much.
Miranda Kaye Novell, Melinda House, David Vaughn, Veronica Stewart, Bobby Heil. Ooh. Related?
Huh? What?
Claire Chamley, Christy Lewis, Sabina Mariella, Rob Deal, Jeffrey Smith, Samantha McDougal, Jenna Pucci, you're there. Josh Brennan, Caroline Mordy, David Haimovich, Nick Dudakovic, Alejandro Guerrero Garcia, Wes Tierney, Ryan Vindeknicht, Lex, Melissa Whitney, Kelly Brusky.
All right.
Andrew Just. Oh, you know what I just realized?
Hmm.
Is that when I'm saying just, it's Andrew pledge. Just pledged $2.
Yeah, you've been saying that a bunch.
I was like, man, there's a whole bunch of people with the last name of Just. I'm a moron.
Oh, okay.
Andrew, Tony St. Cross, Anna LeBrandon, Nick Hargest, Glenn White, Kevin Korticass, Ginny Reinert, Katie Wolganant, Mary Lewis, Bonehead 13,
yeah,
Sam Willingmeyer, Sarah Lake Mitchell, Alicia Fitzsimmons, Dallin Hope, Adam Hicks, Tom Kostelny, Jesse Rudell, Haley Tyree, Rebecca Pope, Jesse McNett, Whitney, and Augie Setterloff.
Hmm.
Oh, Augie Setterloff.
Oh.
I remember when Augie was just a little Setterloff. Okay, here we got, the name is Kat. Thank you so much, Kat. Mike Ponder, Matthew Stevens, Pamela Froese, Christina Spetnewski, and now she put it in, can I just, Spetnewski is how it's pronounced, because she gave us the thing there, but it's spelled Z-B-Y-T-N-I-E-W-S-K-I.
The motherland.
In what world do I get Spetnewski? So thank you so much, Christina, for clarifying that for me, because I would have gone with Zitabendeski. and Brandon Funkhauser,
ooh,
which sounds like he would be a great linebacker or just an overall fun defensive lineman.
He does sound like a Gronk.
Yeah.
Sean Belt, Sarah Mitchell, Ernesto Areca, Michael Bailey, Natalie Connors, Heather Church. Hey, girl. Hi. Danielle Burodick, Jordan Elmer, Eric Guerrieri, Andrew B, Hysteria 51, cool name. Or do you not have parents? Are you a crust punk that just lives on the street?
Oh.
Kelly Harrington, Jake Begun, Priscilla Alba, Manuel Zapata, Caleb McAllister, Kellen Dayton, Haley Gray, Emily Mankus, David Flisk, Christopher Bowles, Gusifame.
Wow.
Got Desiree Lopez, Juan Hernandez, Jennifer Castellega, Wade Prother, Tyree Kordoski, Ellie Marie, Fran Lolacano, Sarah Stayer, Heather Andrews, Joshua Nichols, Jay Stevens, Cracked Underscore Machine, Janelle O'Malley, Madison Jacob, Patrick McMullen, Audra Grintz, Katie Parr, Sonia Vazbrune, Michelle Bess, Arlene Henriquez, Jackson Davis, and Blank Bonafede.
I want to thank Mike Ponder as well. He gave $50, so thank you, Mike, for that. That's very sweet. That's unbelievably nice. And this next list of names, it's either people who give $25 or $50. This is a very wealthy card that
I'm
holding
wealthy.
Here.
This is wealthy. Yeah, it's big money.
So thank you guys so much. Again, $1 or $50, I mean, it all means the world to us. So let's go on. Justin Riley, Tom Jordan, Maya Carraro, Bodil Sorlaken, Mark Strickland, Kyle Sweezy. Ooh, that's kind of like Yeezy, so maybe he's a rapper.
Interesting.
Caitlin Russell, Kyle Lair, Colette McKiernan, and Ashley Bell. Thank you so much.
Ruth Westcott, Callie Budrick. I believe there were also, you met Callie Budrick.
Yes.
Yes, hey, thank you so much, $50. You're nuts. Ryan Shore, Jeff Watson, Tyson Timmer, Brooks Bracken, Christerina, Liam Bryant, William Mayhall, Stephanie Whitney, Jessica Barton, Alexandra Ace, Claire Noonan. It's a Noonan.
Let's get a Noonan.
Carl. Poor Carl.
His name is Carl?
Nope, he just has one name.
Carl.
No one else. No family.
Oh, I like Carl.
Groff Vorharft. Signful Curves. Adam Bitsnitch.
Don't tell him anything.
Bitsnitch. Justin Killian. Castastic. Charles Dowd.
Courtney Ship. Ryan. Ashley Causey, Jake Hart, Charles Griffiths, Maggie.
Jake Hart, that's our friend Jake Hart.
Yeah, Jake Hart.
Jake.
Hey.
Yes, he's got a great show here at the CC Cave Comedy Radio. Or at
no,
at the Creek of the Cave.
Yeah.
Where are we?
Jesus Christ. Maggie Love.
Come on.
Sonia, Ashley Kamel, Eric Foster, Kristen, Nadine Whitmer, Elizabeth Gammel, Sally Kuchar, Mike McMillan, Kim Wyndham, Ashton Little, Ali Trin, and Krista L. Xavier.
All right, I will wrap it all up here for me with Aaron Loftes, Caleb Brock, Ryan Allison, Karen Girdler. Ooh, that's a fun Karen Girdler.
Girdler.
It's the Girdler wedding. Remember that when Leno used to be like, these two names are funny together.
It's a funny
it's
name.
It's a funny name. It's like, I didn't have to write anything. Oh, okay. Karen Girdler, Eden Sundern, TJ Martinez, Mike Leibs, Rebecca Ann Payne, Travis Tim, Shayla Christina, Caitlin Lyons, and John Steinhammer. Thank you so much.
And this is Carrie Anderson, Aaron Diaz, Lucinda Boakman, Ben Strode, Daniel Nelson. Thank you guys so much. Hail Satan.
Yes, thank everybody so much for all of the help that they've given to us over the years. This is fantastic stuff. And remember, if you want to get a shout-out, we've got so many names to get through. But as you can tell, we're getting to them as much as we can. We're getting big chunks.
We're going to do this. You will hear your name be said by three people that are cloudy.
Yeah, terrible at saying them. Yeah. That's what they say, yes. But that's good.
Well, go out there. I hope you're fertile.
Absolutely, everyone. Thank you guys so much for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail me.
Hail Gene.
And Magustalations.
Magustalations. Yes.